Well, officials at the Louisiana Baptist Convention were used to receiving a lot of donations, but one gift that they received in 2005 was really unexpected, and it was actually extraordinary. Now, I know where some of you are thinking, oh, a donation, you know, it's going to be this large number. Listen carefully. It was a group of 20 men from the island of Sumatra. It's in Indonesia. And they sent a gift, a monetary gift of $854. And they sent this to help the people in Louisiana who were hit hard by Hurricane Katrina. Those men were, well, they had experienced natural disaster in their own lives, not but a year earlier. That was the place that was hit by the tsunami, where thousands upon thousands of people died in December of 2004. And actually, teams from Louisiana traveled to that area in Indonesia and actually ministered to the people. And so when they heard about the disaster in Louisiana, they sent this gift. It was a disaster strategist, Gibby McMillan, who said that the gift shows that there was just a spiritual impact when we did that tsunami relief there. And she goes on to say, this gift is an amazing thing. Just think, people on the other side of the world felt led to make a contribution to our disaster relief work here in the United States, in Louisiana. Now, what makes this gift even more amazing, and the reason why I'm telling you this story to introduce our time tonight, is that the average monthly income of someone, of a man in Sumatra, is $100 a month. And so these men, these 20 men, they gave sacrificially because, well, not they gave because they remembered what had been shared with them, but they gave probably a third of their monthly income to support and to give to that. And that was a huge thing. I mean, while $854 might not seem like much, the truth was this gift for an Indonesian man, that was a huge amount of money to give. See, in the Christian life, we're challenged to have a heart like those men who gave sacrificially there. And, you know, in Acts chapter 20, verse 35, one of my favorite verses, and I think some of us have found this to be so true, we think that we're blessed to receive. You know, a lot of times we're, oh yeah, I'm really blessed, I got something, you know. But Jesus said it's more blessed to give than to receive. You know, tonight Jesus observes and declares the reality of, well, sacrificial giving. And that's the title of our message. And again, the reason why I'm sharing this is I think as Americans, it's so important for us to realize how good we actually have it. I mean, we live in the top percentile of the world's wealthiest. And we have so many things that so easily we can take for granted. I think for a lot of us, when things go wrong in the house, we realize, wow, that appliance or that particular thing is so handy, but I never really notice it until it's not working. I think there's a considerable challenge that Jesus offers here today. And, you know, and what I want you to do is just understand that in all of Luke's gospel, up until this point, Jesus has been making his way to the cross. And this is in his final week before he's crucified. He's been teaching in the temple. And now, after having bombarded with all these questions from religious leaders, now Jesus, he's just made a statement at the end of chapter 20 where he's challenging the people, warning the people about how the scribes and the religious leaders were taking advantage of widows and taking advantage of people in bad situations. And here tonight, we're going to look at him really as he's recovering from all of that questioning in chapter 20, he looks up, Luke tells us, and he notices at the temple collection boxes some contrasting contributions. Really contrasting contributors, two different groups, very different. And what would appear on the surface is not really what was going on in reality. Now, if you're taking notes, we learn about the subject of sacrificial giving in two parts here in our text tonight. And so if you're writing these things down, try to remember, it's a very simple outline. One, we're going to learn sacrificial giving from Jesus' observation in verses 1 and 2. And then we're going to learn about sacrificial giving from Jesus' declaration in verses 3 and 4. Now, a little bit of a disclaimer because, you know, a lot of times when people approach these verses, it's always about money. Although the main context and idea here has to do with the monetary contribution to the work of the Lord, there are many different ways that we give, many different things that we give. I want to stop and also just kind of throw this out there. If you're here tonight and you've never surrendered your life to Jesus Christ, you're not going to be inspired to sacrificially give to the Lord. And it wasn't until I met the Lord that I desired to give and to help out with the work of God. And so it's knowing Jesus that inspires us to do that. Now, if you're here tonight and maybe you have the attitude and you sort of look at God as kind of your side dish, you know, God's sort of my helper. He's my cosmic divine Santa Claus that I call on when I need something done. This subject, what we're going to study here tonight, is going to greatly disturb you. It's going to bother you. And I want to challenge you guys because anyone, and don't just, you know, think because I'm teaching this, I have this figured out. You know, when I study these verses, I was so convicted by what I read. So the Word of God, it's challenging to everyone. But, man, it's so important to get the message that Jesus gives here tonight. Well, I want to be clear that this study is not just about money. We spend money and time and all those things. And the Lord wants us to consider how we use His resources. Now, if you're kind of following with me, there are many different kinds of things that we give. And I think it's important to define these before we move into our text. But, you know, one thing that we give a lot of is time. Time is a resource. And it's something that we're called to give. Many times we didn't know how much time we had until we got married. Didn't know how much free time we had on our hands until we had kids. And we go, wow, I had a lot of time. Some of us, you know, there's other ways that we give. We have talents. Now, talents, guys, are natural abilities. Sometimes we learn natural abilities, kind of bring them out. Sometimes people are just naturals at doing certain things. And we can use those natural talents for the Lord. You know, I think about people that have the gift of cleaning. You know, they sort of, and I don't mean that in a spiritual sense, but sort of the talent to come and clean. They walk in a room and they go, this place is filthy. And they start wanting to clean things. Well, you know, talents are important things that God sort of wires us with. And He uses those things, you know, to serve His purposes. And, of course, then the Lord gives us spiritual gifts. You know, someone may be an evangelist that's really called to reach out to masses of people they don't know. Some people have the gift of teaching. God gives us gifts in order to use. He gives us resources in order to do His work. And then, of course, the last thing that I've already mentioned, and that's money. God gives us resources. Sometimes money that we work hard to earn, and sometimes treasure that maybe we inherit or things that we've had in our family. There are many things the Lord entrusts to us. There are many different kinds of things that we can give. There are many places that we give, you know. We could be giving at home. We're called to give at home. We're called to give at church. We're called to give to our family and at work. There's so many different platforms for giving. It's not just at the church. Well, I love what John Wesley said. He's one of my heroes of the faith. John Wesley said, "When I have any money, I get rid of it as quickly as possible, lest it find a way into my heart." I love that. You know, affluence, or just the way that we think about it most often, wealth has a way of corrupting us if we're not careful. I think Wesley understood that. And I think Jesus understood, and it's why He taught His disciples that it's so important to have a giving attitude, to understand this idea of sacrificial giving. So first, let's take a look at Jesus' observation here in verses 1 and 2 of chapter 21 in Luke's gospel. And what I want you to see here, obviously these first two verses, Luke is communicating to us. He says, "And he looked up," that is Jesus, "and saw the rich putting their gifts into the treasury. And he saw also a certain poor widow putting in two mites." So what we have here, Jesus' observation, is really this. Pay attention, guys. Don't miss this. It's an ironic contrast. Because what is on the surface is not really what's going on in reality. There are people that are putting in offerings. And a woman that comes with a very small offering, numerically speaking. And, of course, this contrast Jesus is bringing out for good reason. See, in Jesus' day, when it came to the treasury, these were these trumpet-shaped offering receptacles that would have been placed out. There were 13 of them in the court of the women there in the temple. And because it was Passover, people were from all over the place bringing their offerings. They had brought these long distances to place into these receptacles, these trumpet-shaped receptacles to put their offerings in. And, you know, there was people putting in large amounts and many well-dressed people. You know, I wonder how the rich approached this. You know, based on Jesus' teaching, he talked about and even taught his disciples to not let your right hand know what your left hand is doing. There was a tendency for people to do things in a way to be noticed. And I think the reason why he taught that is because it was a problem. And so you can imagine the huge Passover crowds and the public display that, you know, those trumpets made possible as people came with their large offerings, you know. I mean, imagine the hush of the crowd, you know, as someone walked up with this huge bag of coins, you know, and dropped it in, and people were like, whoa, wow, did you see that? I think as bored as kids would have been back in this day and age, they definitely would have been hanging out there watching and looking. Did you see that one? That was awesome. Maybe even had the attitude, many of the rich, you know, see if you can top that, you know, and sort of wanting to be better than others. And, you know, the ability to give on a scale that is not possible for others many times can sort of produce a delusion of superiority or even spiritual safety for some. Many people with that sort of prideful attitude develop a sense of intrinsic good, when actually to have that attitude is to do great evil. Because it's not about the Lord. Well, that was the first part of this ironic contrast. But notice verse 2. There was this certain poor widow putting in two mites. And this widow was very, very poor. Now, we haven't read verse 3, but what I want you to understand is that in verse 2, when Luke tells us that this lady was poor, the word poor there is a simple general term. It means that it was a person who earned a meager or pitiful wage. Now hold that thought, because when Jesus, and we'll read verse 3 next, but when he mentions this poor widow, he uses a different word. And that word meant utter destitution. It was a poverty in her life that was so visible and so unquestionable that it was just plain to see that she was in a very difficult place. That particular word for poor many times was applied to those that had to be begging in order to get the basics to survive. See, in that day, there was little, really, if any, work for a widow. Poor widows had to struggle for their very survival, and that was definitely the case with this woman. We don't know if this woman might have been one of the widows that was taken advantage of by the scribes that's talked about at the end of chapter 20. But this lone widow makes this awesome contribution. And this was something that Jesus, as he saw it, is sort of applauding in his heart. And he's going to make a declaration about her in a second. But Jesus and anyone else who happened to see her knew that she was poverty stricken. Her clothes were probably worn out and tattered. She probably looked downcast. She probably didn't want to be noticed as she came with her small little two copper coins. Again, maybe you'll notice there, her offering was two coins, these two mites. In the Greek, it's called a lepta. And literally what that means is something that's peeled or fine. It was a very, very thin copper coin. And all we really need to understand about that is they were like our pennies of today, which most people don't even stop to pick up. It was a very small amount. And I think she undoubtedly approached those trumpets very quietly, probably even a little bit stealthy, not wanting to be noticed. But Jesus noticed her. She gave those two mites, not just one. Here's what you guys got to understand. Two mites. She gave them both. Even in her place of poverty, in her place of difficulty, she trusted the Lord, and she gave all that she had. She could have gave one, and no one would have thought any less of her. But by giving too, it was really an act of faith. And not just that. I think there's a certain recklessness that goes with that. I think some people might have said, well, why are you giving too? You should at least save one of those for yourself. But she trusted that God was going to take care of her. It was an act of faith. Now, for the rich, obviously their gifts would have been large, big bags of coins, maybe even other precious metaled things that they would give that would be worth something. But the contrast is to this widow and her small offering, monetarily. But in reality, it was more than everyone put together, is what Jesus is going to say. See, the ironic reality was that the rich were giving only based on their extra, which was more numerically, but not at all sacrificial. And the widow was giving out of her desperate need. Numerically, it was lower. And it was worth less than the riches of them compared monetarily. But it was far beyond everyone put together because she gave sacrificially. You know, appearances can be deceiving. And her little offering was more than everyone else put together. She firmly believed that God would take care of her need. The mere fact that she gave both showed that she trusted God. You know what I love about this and the challenge that I draw from that is that many times I think as believers we're more in danger of trusting our bank accounts than we are of God. You know, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with having a savings account or having a 401k or having a tax-sheltered annuity or being good stewards with what God gives us. But so many times we're in danger of trusting that rather than trusting God. See, Jesus looks at us when we give. He notices how much we give, but he's far more interested, guys, listen to this, he's far more interested in our hearts. It's all about the quality, not the quantity. What irony played out there on the temple grounds as Jesus watched. And so he makes this observation, this ironic contrast. You know, I think if you were to ask a common onlooker in Jesus' day and age, if you were to be there and to do your own Gallup poll, you know what you would ask? Hey, who do you think gave the most here today? Well, they would obviously say, well, it's the guy that came with that huge bag of coins and made the most noise. But that wasn't what was really going on. The reality was it was this widow who gave from her need. And we're going to talk more about that. See, based on that observation, now pay close attention to verses 3 and 4 as Jesus makes a declaration about this woman. Verse 3, so he said, truly I say to you that this poor widow has put in more than all. For all of these, out of their abundance, have put in offerings for God. She out of her poverty put in all the livelihood that she had. See, Jesus' declaration really contrasts two groups of people here in the temple. Those that gave, listen carefully, sacrificially, which would be the widow, and those that gave recreationally. Recreational versus sacrificial. And that's the two different groups that Jesus identifies here. Jesus' declaration was first about the sacrificial giver, and that's the widow. You can sort of write down verse 3 or the end of verse 4. That's dealing with the widow. But to sort of define sacrificial givers, what are sacrificial givers? What is Jesus really challenging through this commendation of this woman here? Well, here is what it is. Sacrificial givers are the believers who give to God so much it hurts. Giving to God so much it hurts. You know, it's funny, when I think about sacrificial giving, a lot of us think about our money, the resources God gives us. But many times when you begin to serve the Lord, you understand that time is such a gift. And, you know, we want to serve the Lord whenever we have plenty of time, you know. And when everything's in order in my life and I got plenty of time, then I can serve the Lord. But so many of us have found that we start out that way. And then we have to start to choose, well, I can't do that thing I want to do because I've decided to serve the Lord in this way. believers who give to God so much it hurts. This was this example from this woman. And notice Jesus says, truly I say to you that this poor widow has put in more than all. Jesus didn't say that she put in more than any one of them. Jesus said that she put in more than all of them. Isn't that fascinating to realize that all of those offerings piled high and this woman came with two small copper coins and yet she gave more? And the reason why was she gave from a place of it causing her to lack something. Put in more than all of them. All the others gave out of their abundance, but she gave out of her poverty. You know, I love this because when we realize that it's not about the quantity but the quality of what we give to the Lord, then even though we may not have a lot of money, it's about our heart in giving those things. This means that even a poor person can serve and please God just as much as anyone with tons of resources. It doesn't matter if you're poor in influence or in gifts or in money. If you sacrificially, if we sacrificially give to God what we have, He sees it and He's pleased. I want you to notice in verse 4, at the end there, He says, but she out of her poverty put in all the livelihood that she had. Livelihood, you know what that means? It's her means of living. And the way that I would define this is just her needed funds. Her needed funds, what she needed in order to survive, she gave out of an act of worship to the Lord. Again, just so you understand, it wasn't required of her to give that. She voluntarily chose to do it. She wasn't doing it out of obligation. She was doing it out of faith and just trusting the Lord and sort of a worshipful act. I like what Billy Graham said. He says, God has given us two hands, one to receive and the other to give. We're not cisterns made for hoarding. We are channels made for sharing. I really believe that sacrificial giving is a direct result of sacrificial living. I think for a lot of us, maybe the reason why we're not wanting to sacrificially give of our time, of our talents, of our treasure, or of our money is because we have not yet learn to sacrificially be surrendered or living for the Lord. See, Paul talked about this. If you're taking notes, write down Romans 12:1. Most of us maybe have memorized this verse. Paul encouraged this. He says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. Paul even demonstrated this in his own life. Galatians 2 verse 20, Paul said this. He said, I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. Sacrificial living is the foundation for sacrificial giving. And once we've surrendered our lives over to the Lord, we, as we look at everything we have, we say, Lord, this is all yours. What do I get to keep? See, Jesus' declaration was also about recreational givers. And so, on the one side, when it came to the sacrificial giver, this widow, he's commending her. So, guys, stop for a second. Jesus is commending the widow, but he is correcting the recreational givers. That's what he does here, just the very beginning of verse 4 when he says, for all of these out of their abundance have put in offerings for God. You know what abundance means? The word there actually refers to extra, what's left. See, Jesus makes it real clear that all the people were only giving after they bought everything they wanted and everything they needed. And the way that I like to look about these people that were recreational givers are those that, well, when it came to their funds, were only giving God their change, whatever was left over. And that's why guys like Oswald Chambers said this. He says, not how much we give, but how much we give. But how much we do not give is the test of our Christianity. The question becomes, what in God's eyes determines the value of a gift? And I think we have to remember that God does not need our money. It's our privilege to give to Him. Giving is necessary for our sake. It challenges our hearts. God loves a cheerful giver. He doesn't want us to be grudging. You know, after you hear this Bible study tonight, you know, when it comes to all those different resources and calls to give, you go, I've got to go give more to the church. I've got to do this. God doesn't want us to have that kind of attitude. He wants us to find joy in giving. It's a heart issue. You know, a gift's value is determined by the spirit in which it is given. If it's given grudgingly, it's not very valuable. You ever have somebody give you a gift, and as maybe they're giving you whatever gift it may be, whatever time of year, they wanted that gift more than you did? So you kind of feel guilty when you take it, because they're like, here you go, I wanted it, but I'm giving it to you anyways. Oh, thanks. I feel great now. You know, the value of a gift is also determined by the cost of the giver. Some of us know all too well during Christmas time. You know that famous phrase, re-gift? Some of us have gotten some re-gifts. We're like, oh, no wonder they gave this to me. You know, it's a re-gift. The value of a gift is determined by what it costs the giver. And that's what made the widow's gift so valuable, because it cost her so much. It came from her needed funds. Centuries earlier, and you guys are almost upon these verses, and so I'm not going to go too deep into them, but in 2 Samuel 24, centuries earlier, in response to Araunah, the Jebusite, this guy, he wanted to dedicate his threshing floor and pay for this altar to be built and bring in all the animals and pay for everything himself just to worship the Lord. And yet David said this in 2 Samuel 24, Verse 24, this is what he said. No, I insist on paying you for it. I will not sacrifice to the Lord my God burnt offerings that cost me nothing. See, David knew that it would not be a gift nor a sacrifice to the Lord if it didn't cost him something. He didn't look for the cheapest way possible to please God. See, giving that costs us is giving that pleases God. See, guys, if we're giving monetarily to the work of the Lord, whether here at this church or missionaries or whatever, and it doesn't cause us to have less of what we might want, maybe we're not giving enough. If we decide that we're going to serve the Lord in terms of our time, and you know it's only whenever we have the time, we're not serving the Lord enough. Because many times as we begin to serve the Lord, we know, man, this is a sacrifice. I have to give something up in order to do this. See, we need to evaluate our giving in light of Jesus' commendation of this poor widow. We're challenged here. Jesus is making it a point that we go beyond convenience and comfort. This widow gave all that she had to live on, in contrast to the way that most people were giving just the extra. Here in these short verses, Jesus was admiring the generous sacrificial gift of this widow that most people maybe wouldn't even have noticed at all. I think as believers, we should always consider increasing our giving. And again, whether of money or time or talents, to go beyond the point of convenience, comfort, or safety. Many times we say, well, I'll serve the Lord when I have time. Guess what? You'll never have time. I'll give to the work of the Lord whenever I have extra money. And that never happens. I think there's some questions that we need to consider, and I want to just offer these tonight, and just sort of with the attitude of, hey, these are kind of the real-life, nitty-gritty kinds of questions we have to ask when we consider the recreational giver and the sacrificial giver. And here's the questions. First one, does giving money to the work of the Lord mean that we have to delay getting something that we want? Or do we go on extra vacations, buy clothes we don't need and unnecessary things, and then toss God the change? Does serving the Lord mean that we have to give up extra activities that we want to do? Or do we only serve when our extra activities are in their off season? Does coming to fellowship, whether on a Wednesday night like this or a Sunday or during the week, does that mean we have to say no to the fun activities our friends want us to do? Or do we just do things when they work out with our maxed out schedule? It's sad, but most of us can be better stewards of what God has given us. You know, according to the National Wildlife Association, each week people in the United States generate 4 million tons of trash. During the holiday season between Thanksgiving and Christmas, though, we throw out even more. And it's this article I read said 5 million tons per week. And a high percentage of that trash, according to this survey, was just wasteful. It gives some examples, and I thought this was kind of staggering. If each person in America throws away just one bite of Thanksgiving turkey, that comes out to 8.1 million pounds of edible turkey in the trash can. If each person throws away one tablespoon of stuffing, 16.1 million pounds of edible stuffing is thrown and wasted. And then, of course, there's all the wrapping paper that comes around the holidays. The average U.S. consumer gift wraps 20 packages during the holidays. If each person wrapped just 3 of those packages with recycled paper, this article says, the amount of paper that would be saved could cover 45,000 football fields. Of course, New Year's celebrations only add to the trash heap. After Times Square every year, for example, the New York Sanitation Department cleans up, this is just staggering, 42 tons of extra garbage. You know, my point in reading this is that environmentalists aren't the only ones that are bothered by the waste of valuable resources. God hates waste. He doesn't want the resources that He entrusts to us to go to waste. He doesn't want our spiritual gifts, our time, our money, our talents, our vitality to be lost or unused. And the Lord wants us to bear fruit. Guys, we live in a world that brainwashes us to waste our time, to waste our money, and to waste our resources. And you know what for? Satisfaction. We live in a world that markets us to the point of exhaustion and draws out our God-given time, talents, and treasure for things we don't need to the detriment of our spiritual bank accounts. Maybe that's why it was once said that greed is a bottomless pit, which exhausts the person in an endless effort to satisfy the need without ever reaching satisfaction. You know, as we ponder this subject of spiritual or sacrificial giving, we need to allow God's Spirit to challenge us. We need to allow the Lord to show us, hey, these are some things that you really don't need that could bless someone else. I think the two biggest questions that we have to ask ourselves tonight is this. One, do we have a heart that desires to give to God? We have to cultivate that. The more we get to know the Lord, the more you want to give to the work of the Lord. So that's the ticket. You want to develop a sacrificially giving attitude in your life? Just focus on Jesus. Look at what He gave. The second question is what side of the contrast do I fall on? I think we all have to ask ourselves, am I a recreational giver? Am I only giving when it's convenient or comfortable? Or am I a sacrificial giver? That I'm giving to the point that it hurts. I have another story for you guys. I actually have a couple. But some of us know in New York there's an airport called LaGuardia. Well, the reason why it's called LaGuardia is because back in the early 1900s, there was a famous mayor there. And when he was the mayor, he was actually, Mayor LaGuardia, was presiding at a police court. And I thought this story was just crazy, but listen. At this police court, they brought in this trembling old man before him. And he had been charged with stealing a loaf of bread. And his response to the judge, really to the mayor at the time, was, you know, hey, my family's starving. And so the mayor looked at him and said, well, I've got to punish you. The law makes no exceptions, and I can do nothing but sentence you to a fine of $10. And then he added, after reaching into his pocket, here's the $10 to pay your fine. And now I remit the fine. And he tossed the $10 bill into this famous hat that he would keep out when he did this. And what he says next is awesome. He goes, furthermore, I'm going to fine everybody in this courtroom 50 cents for living in a town where a man has to steal bread in order to eat. Mr. Bailiff, collect all the fines and give them to the defendant. Well, the hat was passed around, and the incredulous old man had the light of heaven in his eyes, and the guy walked out of there with $47.50. You know, while this is an example of from the courts of law, and I don't know if it would fly in these days, guys, this is what it should be like in the courts of God. This is what it should be like in the church. Instead of us being so consumed with meeting our every want and whim, we look around and we say there are people around us who are hurting and who have needs. And make the effort to be used by God for eternal purposes. See, the early church was so excited and so in love with Jesus that people's needs were met in fellowship. There's something that C.S. Lewis said that I just have to share as we think about this subject of sacrificial giving. C.S. Lewis offered this profound advice. He said, I do not believe that one can settle how much we ought to give. He says, I'm afraid the only safe rule is to give more than we can spare. In other words, if our expenditure on comforts, luxuries, and amusements is up to the standard common among those with the same income as our own, we're probably giving way too little. If our charities do not at all pinch or hamper us, I should say they are too small. There ought to be things that we should like to do and cannot do because our charitable expenditures excludes them. I don't know about you, but that's a very challenging thing to realize, that real giving boils down to the sacrifice, the things we have to give up. So many times we only want to give our time, our talent, our treasure when it works conveniently with our life. And so we don't take the steps that we need to in order to grow. Guys, when it comes to giving, the posture of our hearts makes all the difference. The Bible tells us in 1 Corinthians 13, verse 3, if I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames but have not love, I gain nothing. But if we give with the heart that this widow had, we gain much, and we honor God. God weighs our motivations. I think that's either something that's terrifying or something that's very comforting. Giving that pleases God costs us. We need to give in such a way that we go without something that we'd like to hang on to. One of the great old school preachers named Joseph Parker says that the gold of wealth, which is given because it is not needed, God hurls into the bottomless pit. But the copper tinged with blood, he lifts and kisses into the gold of eternity. You know, God can do great things with tiny offerings. You know, down through the ages, those two little copper coins have spoken to multitudes. No one remembers what the rich people gave. They only remember what this widow gave. Because it was something that was done out of a sacrificial heart. So many of us want to make a difference in this world. We want to be a spiritual light and salt to those around us. We want to make a difference. But you know what? We have to pay a price in order to do that. There's going to be a required cost involved. One day, Jesus is going to even up accounts. Go and read 1 Corinthians chapter 3 about the judgment seat of Christ. I want to close with this little story, and then I'm done. It's called A Little Girl's Pennies, and it really touched my heart, and I think it says a lot about just having a right focus. But there was this little girl named Hattie Wyatt. This is kind of way back in the day, but she was a little girl that came to a small Sunday school, and in a lot of urban places, Sunday schools can be overcrowded, so they don't let other kids in. They have to turn kids away, and this was one of those situations. As she came to go to Sunday school, she was a believer, There was no room for her. She kept coming, and they kept turning her away because it was too full. And after this had happened, it was a couple years later that she actually got sick and died. And no one ever guessed her little secret until they actually went to clean out where her room was, and they found beneath her pillow this torn little pocketbook, and it had 57 pennies in it. And it wasn't just the pennies, but it was actually the note that was written, this little note that was scribbled there on this piece of paper with her 57 pennies in it. Said, to help build the little temple bigger so that more children can go to Sunday school. For 2 years, she had saved her pennies for what was closest to her heart. And at one point, when the pastor found this out, he told the congregation, and the people began to make all these enormous donations. And her 57 pennies turned into $250,000. And even today in Philadelphia, you can go to this Baptist temple that seats 3,300 people. There's accommodations for over 1,400 students. There's a temple hospital and a temple Sunday school that's so big that no one has ever turned away. She was only a little girl, but I mean, who could have ever imagined the impact of her unselfishness and her 57 little pennies? I want to close tonight with just this thought to ponder, this question to ponder again. Are we recreational givers or sacrificial givers of the resources that God has blessed us with? Consider that. Let's pray.